The water sluiced down his arms, his legs, his flat belly, darkening his body hair. "What are you doing here?" Lucita blurted. "I've come to invite you to lunch," he said, grinning down at her. "First an invigorating swim, and then a pleasant lunch. At sea." He pointed seaward, and Lucita saw a trim little sloop riding at anchor out beyond the breakers. It was painted sky blue and gold. "It's too early for lunch," she said. With a laugh, he said, "Not if you have to catch it first." He reached out his hand, and before she even thought about it, she lifted hers and allowed him to clasp it and pull her up to her feet. "My bag," she said. "No problem." Reaching into the waistband of his skin-tight briefs, Dan pulled out a pencil-slim roll of clear plastic. It opened up into a thin, flexible pouch, big enough to take Lucita's handbag. "We manufacture this stuff up in orbit," he told her. "Solo Crystal is the trade name. Amazing stuff. Waterproof, too." He took her hand again, and they trotted to the water, waded in, and dived over a breaking wave. Side by side, they swam to Dan's sloop. Lucita saw the name stenciled across her stern. Yankee. She stretched out on the forward deck to let the sun dry her, but soon turned and propped her head up on one hand, watching fascinated as Dan set the sails and hauled up the anchor, all with the help of computer-directed servo motors. The big, dazzling sails filled with wind, and the graceful ship bit into the water, nosing away from the beach and out to sea. Dan broke out light fishing tackle, beckoned Lucita back to the cockpit, and baited the hook for her. "You catch us some lunch while I mine the radar," he said. "I want to make sure your Russian friends aren't following us close enough to eavesdrop." Lucita's eyes widened. "What do you mean?" She looked genuinely surprised. "Don't you know that Moloch has a team of people following you whenever you leave your house?"
"No, I don't believe it."
Shrugging, Dan said, "It's true." Lucita turned away from him and angrily cast the fishing line into the sea. Dan checked the display screen. Radar showed no boats or planes suspiciously nearby. Sonar gave no echoes of underwater craft. The horizon looked clear and bright, the sky as brazen as hammered brass. He had forgotten how quiet it could be on a sailboat with nothing but the wind in your ears and the slap of the waves against the hull. Even in space, there was always the hum of electrical equipment or the whir of air fans. Silence up there meant quick death. Here, it was a pleasure. She was no fisherman, Dan found. Lucita quickly hooked something. It would be hard not to this far out. Her line bowed, and she shrieked happily. He went to help her. She was excited, but hadn't the faintest idea of what to do next. Under Dan's guidance, she reeled in her catch. He netted it and brought it flopping and flapping onto the deck, a nice-sized sea trout. "I'll clean it and you cook it, okay?" he suggested. She gave him a waif's sorry, almost frightened expression.
"I have never cooked a fish."
Dan pretended to scowl. "All right, I'll clean it and I'll cook it. How's that?"
"Who will sail the boat while you do?"
"The computer," Dan replied carelessly. "Trims the sails better than I ever could."
"Is there something I could do?" she asked.
He jabbed a thumb toward the hatch that led down into the galley. "Find the fridge and open a bottle of white wine. Glasses are in the cabinet above it." Lucita hesitated. "You do know how to use a corkscrew?"
"I think so."
"Give it a try. If you get cork in the wine, I'll have to make you walk the plank." She opened the galley hatch and ducked down into the darkness below. There was cork in the wine, but not enough for Dan to complain about. They feasted on the broiled fish and frozen beans and carrots that Lucita thawed in the galley's microwave oven. "I understand you're seeing a good deal of Comrade Moloch," he said after the first glass of wine had gone down.
"Yes. Vasily comes here every chance he gets."
"To see you." She nodded. "Doesn't look too happy about it," Dan thought. Watching her as she sat on the padded bench that ran across the back of the cockpit, the Caribbean wind playing with her dark, thick hair, he thought briefly of what fun it would be to sail on for days, for months, never setting eyes on land, just sailing the Spanish Main like the buccaneers of old, with this lovely Latin prize as his beautiful prisoner. He reached for the wine bottle, slanted in a frost-covered electronic chiller. "Don't be a romantic idiot, old boy," he told himself. "This is a business trip. Tax-deductible and all that. Keep your mind on business." "You don't blame Moloch for what happened?"
"No, I don't," she snapped before he could finish the sentence. Vasily was very supportive, very helpful. The men who killed Teresa are being punished severely.
The gulag, Dan said.
The mines on the moon, she said, as if correcting him.
I suppose I'll end up there someday.
You? Why would you be arrested by the Russians? Watching her face carefully as he spoke, Dan said,
They'll find some reason sooner or later. They don't want anybody operating in space but themselves.
Are you doing anything against the law?
Grinning. Every day.
Truly?
Lucita, dear child, it's impossible to do anything that makes a profit that isn't against some law they've written somewhere.
But the Russians would never arrest you. They have no reason to, do they?
He shrugged.
Has Moloch ever spoken about me? Has he discussed my operations at the Nueva Venezuela factory with your father?
No, she replied, shaking her head. Not that I know of. Are you going to marry him?
Dan heard himself ask.
He had not intended to. The words came from his lips before he had thought about them.
Yes.
Just the one word, without a smile. Without any trace of joy or anticipation or any warmth at all.
But you don't love him, Dan said.
Her chin went up a stubborn notch.
How do you know who I love and who I do not love?
You do love him?
That is my affair and not yours.
Dan pursed his lips. Then, so you're going to marry him whether you love him or not?
I am going to marry him.
Why?
He saw turmoil in her eyes. A molten flow of conflicting emotions.
Then she sat up straighter, as if forcing herself to regain control of her passions.
He is the only man who has asked me, she answered coldly, almost mockingly. After all, I am not getting any younger.
And neither is your father, Dan said.
He wants to be president of Venezuela pretty damned badly, doesn't he?
Anger flashed in Lucita's eyes, but before she could respond, the emergency beeper on the radio pulsed its shrill signal. Dan spun around in his swiveled deck chair and hit the audio switch.
Randolph here, he said.
Dad, it's Pete Weston.
The lawyer's voice sounded agitated, frightened. Dan touched the scrambler button, but it popped back up to normal mode. Weston was not scrambling the signal. He was speaking in the open where anyone could hear him and understand.
Dan frowned.
Usually the lawyer scrambled even the most routine communications.
What is it, Pete?
We just got a kind of garbled transmission from Dolphin 1. They've been boarded by Russians.
What?
Radar and telemetry have been tracking them routinely until this morning. Looks like a Russian spacecraft burned in on them in a very high-energy trajectory and made a rendezvous with them at approximately 10:30 a.m.
The Russians boarded them?
From what we were able to get out over the radio link, yes. Then the link went dead.
Was there a fight? Is anybody hurt?
Don't know. All we've got for sure is that the Russian spacecraft came from the moon, intercepted our ship, and now it's heading back to Luna Groth, with Dolphin 1 in tow.
Dan felt the breath sag out of him.
Did you hear me, boss? The Russians are taking our ship back to the moon with them, and our crew, or whoever's left alive among them.
Chapter 21 Are you certain that your information is accurate? Njombe's deep voice sounded almost like a growl in Dan's earphones. He turned to face the Angolan, although all he could see was a featureless gold-tinted visor set into the helmet of the black man's spacesuit. Like the five others of his desperate little band, Njombe looked somewhat like a knight decked out in white armor. But Dan saw that the armor was dingy here and there, and the heavy boots they wore lacked spurs.
For the amount of money I bribed that little code clerk with, he answered, the information ought to be golden, literally.
The six of them were hovering inside the big sepulchral sphere of an empty Soviet ore freighter, one of the dozens of globular unmanned spacecraft that regularly plied the route between the mines on the moon and Kosmograd, where the ores were transshipped to their buyers among the third world space factories. They had boarded the empty Russian freighter when it had been less than 12 hours away from its landing center at Luna Groth, the Soviet base on the moon's Mare Tranquillitatis, the Sea of Tranquility, not far from the abandoned site of the old Apollo 11 Tranquility base, where men first set foot on the moon's dusty surface. Dan had swiftly decided that he had no option but to force the Russians who ran Luna Groth to give up their prisoners, and it had to be done while the men from his Dolphin 1 spacecraft were still on the moon, before they were transferred to the Soviet Union for trial as pirates. He had left